I'm gonna wake up. Yes and no, I'm gonna kiss some part of. I'm gonna keep this secret. I'm gonna close my body.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And tonight we have 2002's Die Another Day, our final Pierce Brosnan Bond movie. Brother Jay, you're the Bond expert. Mm-hmm. Introduce us to Die Another Day.
This was a tonal shift in the Bond universe, even though it was still Brosnan, because this movie had a very different style. But it stayed with the trend of being mostly mediocre.
And Brother Drew, what was your initial response to this?
Much like the last movie, it showed a lot of promise in the beginning. And then cratered.
Do you think it cratered as much as the last one?
It's in a more spectacular fashion, maybe.
So I was expecting to really be disappointed with this movie. And quite frankly, I thought it was just fine. It was fun. There was really nothing wrong with it. I mean, it had lots of little things wrong with it, but it fits. I think it fits very well within the Bond universe.
That's generous.
I mean, just like lots of... like, this was one of the most... this was the highest grossing Bond movie until Casino Royale. No, maybe until Skyfall, actually.
Well, this would have been the last movie until Casino Royale.
Yeah, but I mean, it's... I mean, even adjusted for inflation, it still is one of the highest grossing Bond movies ever. Also, like Moonraker. Like, the ones that go over the top tend to make a lot of money, but then they have to kind of reset. Do you know who was in line and actually who was petitioned by Pierce Brosnan to direct this movie?
Oh, no. Who?
Brett Ratner.
Oh, God.
Now, the Broccolis didn't like Brett Ratner. They didn't think he was a good enough director. I might agree with them. But this guy, Lee Tamaori...
he really liked MTV Cribs.
You think that was what this was all about?
I think that's what that like weird slow-mo to fast cut effect was, right? Isn't that how they intro'd all the segments on MTV Cribs?
Oh, I didn't know that. That's funny. Yeah, it's like he learned a new technique. Although, it's just, there's a lot of poorly over-techniqued bits of this movie.
This movie feels very much like they were trying to start in a new direction with Bond, and rather than start with a new Bond, they were like just gonna start, we're gonna reimagine the cinematography and push the franchise forward.
Well, what did Pierce Brosnan do so wrong? That's what I want to know. Why was he replaced?
I don't know.
I thought he was great. He was the best part of this movie.
I think perhaps when did his wife pass away?
Did he get replaced or did he quit?
Well, I know Timothy Dalton wishes he was still Bond. But I don't know, maybe Brosnan stepped away. There's an interesting piece of trivia before we get into the movie. And we will get into the movie this week. But piece of trivia that after the release of the movie, Pierce Brosnan was approached by a man in a Dublin bar who asked to shake his hand. And Brosnan complied and then cracked up when the man quipped, "That's the closest my hand will ever get to Halle Berry's ass."
What did you think of her in this movie?
I mean, I didn't think she was as bad as Denise Richards.
She was not.
Or Tanya Roberts. But she wasn't nearly as good as... well, okay. You think she was in the Tanya Roberts category?
They gave her more to do. They were really trying hard to make her a thing.
Oh, way too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
The problem was, if they wanted her to be a thing, you can't damsel her like three times.
There was plans from the studio to make a Jinx series spin-off set of movies.
Oh, yeah.
I assume Michael Madsen was already signed up. Sure, acting like he was.
Shortly after the release of Die Another Day, the media began questioning whether or not Brosnan would reprise his role for the fifth time. At that time, he was approaching his 50th birthday. Brosnan kept in mind that both fans and critics were unhappy with Roger Moore playing the role until he was 58. But he was receiving popular support from both critics and the franchise fan base for the fifth installment. For this reason, he remained enthusiastic about reprising his role. Throughout 2004, it was rumored that negotiations had broken down between Brosnan and the producers to make way for a new, younger actor. This was denied by MGM and Eon Productions. In July 2004, Brosnan announced that he was quitting the role, stating, "Bond is another lifetime behind me." In 2004, Brosnan said he considered himself dismissed from the role. Although Brosnan had been rumored frequently as still in the running to be 007, he had denied it several times, and in February 2005, he posted on his website that he was finished with the role. Daniel Craig took the role 14 October 2005.
So do you think he got Vince Valuft?
No, I think a combination of factors. I think he was just done with it. I think he wanted to walk away from it where he felt he was still on top, and I suspect, I don't think he would have gotten the script for Casino Royale. I don't think they would have given it to him.
Because this was the last movie in the first timeline. Like, Casino Royale was a hard reboot at a resetting of the time.
Well, not only that, I mean, not that Brosnan couldn't have pulled a lot of it off, but there was a lot more physical stunt work that would have been required in the first in Casino Royale that I don't know that he would have been capable of. He could have done some of it, but not a lot of it. Certainly not as much as Daniel Craig, I suspect. I mean, granted, there are stunt people involved, but still. Just my opinion.
Shall we just dive into the movie?
I think we better.
Okay, well, I guess apologies to Brother Drew for last week's Kubo and the Two Strings, which we gave short shrift. And you called that out at the time, which is awesome. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, we were all pretty tired last week.
Apparently.
I mean, I, for one, didn't have as good a notes as I normally do. So this week, I'm much more prepared and less tired. And Brother Jay is drinking from a yard of soda.
It's a liter.
Looks like he's drinking from one of those Mexican prayer candles.
Santeria,
something like that.
No, it's those bottles that Mom used to make Kahlua in the basement closet.
What?
Oh, Drew doesn't remember that.
No,
that's one of those passing things.
It was a 70s thing.
Yeah,
my mom was. You remember Mom was really into Kahlua? Do you remember that?
I do.
There was a while before that, where they tried to make their own Kahlua.
Huh. Yeah, because you can. But I mean, if this was if our mother was her age then now, she would be making kombucha.
Oh.
In the basement.
Kombucha. Ugh.
Yeah. Getting her booch on.
That's probably true. And her but then horrifying. Again, remember, all she had, the same.
She had the like yogurt maker also.
Hey, that was some of the best yogurt.
Was it?
What?
Was it though?
It was. You don't remember them making yogurt?
No, but I'm gonna guess that it was stored in unlabeled parquet containers.
Actually, I think it came in these things that it was made in something like a ramekin. And I believe there were three or four of them in the little device.
I think it was like a six pack, actually. But
okay, well, maybe.
Yeah. Not parquet. We never had parquet.
Oh, no, it would have been Fleischmann's.
Yeah. Parquet was a step up. That was too expensive.
Okay.
And probably because our mother had a preference for the Fleischmanns. And our grandmother did too. Until they didn't.
I don't know. Can you get Fleischmanns anymore?
Not Fleischmann's real stuff. The mom still gets the Fleischmann's olive oil, which is olive oil and trans fats. But
yeah, well, I can't believe it's not butter, light, made out of cancer juice.
I use just butter, real butter.
Yeah, I use real butter for eggs. Everything else goes margarine.
I use real butter exclusively. Real butter and olive oil, sometimes in conjunction, sometimes separately.
So back to Kubo and the Two Strings. Anyway, so kudos to Drew for calling out our Kubo issues. And while I'm happy to have done that medley of or a combination of different versions of While My Guitar Gently Weeps, I realized later that you know, that was basically filling a hole that could have been filled with, I don't know, interesting conversation about that movie.
That was a tough one. This one's going to be better.
Yeah.
Better being relative.
Although I've gotten good feedback about the last one. Part of that is that people like if we go off the rails to call us ourselves out on going off the rails. It humanizes us. So this movie begins, oddly enough, in North Korea with surfing.
Which is almost timely.
It is timely, and yet there is no reason why you would surf in.
Well, you have those stealth wetsuits.
Why didn't they stealth plane in with those little switchblade things?
They couldn't ski, so they had to surf.
Well, I was disappointed later that there wasn't any skiing.
Well, but you wanted underwater baccarat.
There you go. But so we surf. And we see James Bond, Pierce Brosnan, and his two South Korean allies infiltrating the North Korean military base belonging to Colonel Tan Sung Moon, played by Will Young Lee from Witchblade, Bionic Woman, Total Recall, and Red Dawn. All the latter three are remakes, but he was in the whole series of Witchblade.
I liked Witchblade.
I made my wife watch this opening part with me,
and
she was very amused by some of the translations.
It was wildly inaccurate, I would assume.
Not wildly, but
like Google Translate.
No, it's more like the subtitles added a lot more color. Like he says, "Open the door." And the subtitles say, "Retract the blast doors."
So Colonel Tan Sung Moon is an army officer who's illegally selling weaponry in exchange for African conflict diamonds. So Bond has to pose as a weapons dealer named Mr. Van Bierk. And he rigs his briefcase full of diamonds with C4. In the least subtle way of rigging anything with anything. It's like, first of all, that briefcase did not seem to be providing any separation for those little packets of diamonds, those little compartments. A strong jostle would have mixed them all together.
And it seemed like a really bad idea for like the world's most renowned secret spy to try and go undercover.
Well, that's another thing.
But you've just uncovered the premise of the entire series, though.
So he meets Moon and his assistant, Zhao, played by Rick Yoon.
After you get to watch him with the human punching bag.
The North Korean bits are, I thought, really interesting. Like, over the top, sure. Unnecessary, probably. But told the story in an efficient way.
Hovercraft over a minefield, as if the downdraft wouldn't set them off.
Mythbusters did a whole thing on whether this would work, and it turns out it would.
Oh, well, I'm amazed.
Yeah.
Because I would have thought the opposite.
Rick Yoon is from Olympus Has Fallen and The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, that's what boyfriend Jesse said.
So, after the diamonds are handed over, Zhao discovers Bond's true identity using his Ericsson cell phone or whatever, and informs Colonel Moon. Colonel Moon then keeps up the act and pulls out his tank buster weapon and shoots the helicopter. So we have mass mayhem, and they're going to execute Bond. In the meantime, Colonel Moon's father, General Moon, played by Kenneth Zhang, from Rush Hour 1 and 2, Memoirs of a Geisha, The Replacement Killers, and John Woo's The Killer.
That is quite an assortment of movies.
Oh, my wife also pointed out that the bad guy is Zhao.
Uh-huh.
Zhao's a Chinese name.
Well, maybe they're multicultural. They employ many of the Asian persuasion.
Apparently. There you go. So, General Moon calls Sun Moon, calls his son Colonel Moon. The James Bonding guys called these guys Full Moon and Half Moon.
Nice.
Anyway, that's pretty good.
We have the Bond sets off the bomb, which ends up embedding bunches of diamonds in Zhao's face.
It's a great origin for a Bond villain.
Oh, it is. For any villain, really.
Mm-hmm.
For a Batman villain, actually.
Yeah.
So,
and this is where I have the first problem with the movie.
Wait, the surfing wasn't the first problem?
No, I got over the surfing because, yeah, the suits were cool, and I hate surfing, so I was fine with that. Well,
okay, this is for the first time in a Bond movie they had surfing or things that look like surfing without playing Surfin' USA.
You're thinking of Top Secret. Come on.
No, but that was skeet surfing. But didn't they play when Bond took the wrecked snow machine ski and ski down a mountain, didn't they actually play a Beach Boy song?
I don't know. I'm blocking it out.
I'm pretty sure
sounds like something they would do.
But they identify Bond as a British assassin.
Well, that's what he is, kind of.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but he's not. He's
got a license to kill.
Exactly. But
British assassin. That gives him way more credit than he deserves.
But in the original Korean, he just said, "Oh, it's a British spy."
touche.
He said, "That's Bond."
Exactly.
I see.
But he was there to kill Colonel Moon, right?
Yeah, I think so.
To assassinate him?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So he is pointing at it.
Maybe he's just there to steal his eye.
It could be. So then we have a hovercraft chase in the DMZ, which I thought was pretty fun. Now, yes, is it far-fetched? Especially at the end when Bond's hovercraft goes sideways and basically gets upended a little bit. That would set off every mine in the whole place, but oh well.
Also, that they would have just exposed mines that he could see well enough to have explode by impacting them.
By shooting them?
Mm-hmm.
So then we have the shticky line, Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. And then we get the open, which is this montage of welding Barry women and scorpions and torture scenes.
It is the darkest.
Yeah. That's what I said. This is a very different direction in cinematography for the films. And this is kind of a master exposition in a dark, dark way that we haven't seen before. I mean, I really do think they were trying to go somewhere in a different direction with the Bond franchise, thinking this would make it kind of more edgy. This is kind of a new way to introduce storyline. It certainly was a good way to abbreviate some of the story into the opening of the film. This was a long movie.
Well, this was also, what, the 20th Bond movie?
Yeah, something like that.
Because they're trying to do too much. If they're trying to go in a different direction, they could have. By the way, all the Scorpion stuff in the beginning, this whole opening credits to Talos Weekends, went nowhere.
It had no payoff.
Exactly, none. Zero. They had one line in the very beginning of the movie about it, and that's it. In fact, the whole North Korean torture lady I thought was going to come back, but no.
Well, I mean, he used the scorpion poison to escape from the hospital.
Is that what he did, or did he just...
You think that's how he stopped his heart?
Well, he used that to trick them.
I thought it was just like super meditation.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was all
like from the television show The Master.
His was super meditation, but they had supposed that it was a reaction, a long-term reaction from the poison, because that's what they said.
Ah.
Oh. I missed that part.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
But I loved this opening credits, just for the reason you said, that it actually advanced the story while being very, very stylized. So it was like a combination of the best opening visuals to date with the worst song ever.
Exactly. And I mean, okay, so this, you know, I watched this movie a couple times.
The worst song ever? Are you sure you want to stick with that?
I'm going to agree because, I listened to it the second time and I had to give it to Madonna that this was catchy. But it is so very specific to that time. Like, it was dated the moment it was released.
It was worse than the Sheryl Crow song.
Oh, most definitely. Worse than the Garbage song.
Yeah.
But not worse than that horrible Jack White Quantum of Solace crap.
It was worse.
It was worse. That's for sure. In fact, it was kind of the same sort of techno-rappy. Well, it was more techno than the Jack White thing, but even Elton John thought it was the worst Bond tune ever.
Did somebody ask him about it?
He's just bitter he didn't have one.
Probably. Yeah. The song was nominated both for a Golden Globe Award for Best Original Song and a Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Original Song. So people
did it win either? Gold.
I'm sure it did not. Or I don't know. I don't know about the Raspberry. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't the worst song ever made, but I think it's probably one of the worst Bond theme songs.
It is the worst Bond theme.
Also, you know, so they tried to go a new direction, whatever, but immediately they started doing shtick because this is the 20th anniversary or their 40th year anniversary or both. And so they had a nod to each movie in this movie. Like, there was a specific thing in the movie that referenced another movie.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, there's a list on IMDb if you want to hit the trivia. I did not copy it. I don't want to read from it. But
well, Halle Berry coming out of the ocean was one, right?
Yes. And also the laser fight was another one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So and literally there are 18 others of them.
I didn't even notice.
No, I didn't realize until I read the list, but it was on purpose.
That explains why this was a bad movie.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to do weird stuff, but
it started out so great, though.
They tried to go way too many directions all at the same time, is I think the problem. And they didn't go any direction. In effect, they went no direction.
Well, I mean, I would argue that this is a perfectly fine movie. I mean, it fits along. It's very formulaic with the Bond formula.
It's an okay movie, but it's not a good movie.
The thing that does this movie that's worst service is the CGI.
Yes,
because you know we've mocked the whole Jaws and some of the crazy practical effects that are kind of that don't work very well. But the CGI in this movie was the worst. The fact that they kept doing that thing with the slowing down and speeding up the action, like slowing it down, but also every chase was sped up. Like they did the thing where they kind of undercrank the camera so that it looks like it's going faster than it is, but they did it digitally, which is just, it didn't work. It was awful.
Yeah. And the most egregious CGI was the windsurfing.
Oh yes.
In front of the tidal wave.
Yeah.
I mean, that just looked like animation.
Yeah.
It was a cartoon.
Anyway, so after the Madonna theme song, 14 months later, actually, Bond is released in exchange for Zhao, who is captured during that time. So he's sedated and taken to meet M. Again, Judi Dench.
Yeah, when they pass each other on the bridge, Bond looks like shit. He's got this long, scraggly beard and hair, and his clothes are all torn up. And then he passes Zhao, who looks downright dapper. He's like nice, clean, crisp orange jumpsuit, and he's all clean and happy.
Well, the British are humanitarians, and the Koreans are savages.
Well, I mean, how...
North Koreans.
How do you turn Pierce Brosnan into Billy Connolly in 14 months? I mean, that's quite a transformation.
Yeah, for that matter, you could have had him done river dancing. So, but it was convenient that there was fog on the bridge. Otherwise, it would have made Moon's little speech unspeakable. He wouldn't have had any leverage to try and coerce Bond the final time.
Yeah.
So Bond gets taken back and put at the hospital part of the ship or whatever. And
they threatened to put him in the Falklands.
Well, yeah, because he's actually suspected of having leaked information under duress.
Yeah, M is pissed.
Yes.
M did not want to trade Zhao for him. No. And she was pissed that he did not commit suicide.
Yeah, exactly. And he didn't actually want to be traded either, as it turns out.
The cost is too high.
Yes. And then he used the defibrillator to viciously maim the two doctors that came in to save his life.
So this version of M, Judi Dench, she has never liked Bond, right?
Yeah, not at all.
In the, even after the reboot, she doesn't like Bond. She doesn't like Bond until the bitter end.
You don't think she likes Daniel Craig?
No.
I guess I will have to rewatch.
I was going
to
say, if you rewatch them, especially in Quantum of Solace, there are a couple scenes where she absolutely just gives it to him. So,
well, okay. This, by the way, I'm gonna give the, you know, this. So the movie had probably the worst title song, but I think this had the best use of Moneypenny ever.
Oh, I 100% disagree with you.
Oh no, she gets to do it with Bond and gets killed all at the same movie.
Yeah,
and not in that order.
No, this was the worst treatment of Moneypenny.
No, this is the most
disrespectful of Moneypenny since she was like jilted.
Exactly,
jilted at the car.
So you think so because they tarted her up and made her all puppy lovesick for Bond?
Yeah.
She's always been puppy lovesick for Bond.
The best versions of Moneypenny is when she's like sort of flirting on equal footing.
Agreed.
And rolling her eyes at him in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have a good quote in here where, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
Oh, this hit all the political notes it needed to.
But he walks into the hotel in Hong Kong in just like hospital gear.
Oh, it's great. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
No shoes and his shirt open.
We will not have another Kubo. We need to go back. So, but first they go to Cuba. Well, no,
apologies.
Actually, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right.
Don't blink.
No, we were right on track.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. We were right on track. I apologize, Brother Jay. You may drink from your yard. So...
Hey, I got it in my MF and notes, man.
Yeah, I bet you do.
The background chatter when he was walking through the lobby was great. It was like a bunch of harumphing and no tie.
Broccoli, broccoli, broccoli. Rutabaga, rutabaga, rutabaga.
No shoes, open shirt, navel exposed.
Yes, oh, yeah. he looked like a homeless man who just pulled himself out of the river.
Exactly. He wasn't the only one. He was the only one not wearing a tuxedo or smoking.
Yeah.
Because it was Hong Kong.
When he pulled himself up on the dock, was I the only one that noticed his like weird little Spider-Man hop when he got to the top of the ladder?
Did you also notice how bad the flat matte painting behind was?
You could see the artist's signature in the corner.
It looked like one of those velveteen fiber optic lamp lit backgrounds.
I think Bob Ross was still painting the happy little clouds. But yeah, go check out the Spider-Man jump. It's amazing.
So we have that whole scene. Although, what was the Chinese masseuse going to do to Bond? Was she there to blackmail him?
Yes, she was there to seduce him into getting blackmail material.
Okay, all right. Because the gun was unnecessary. If she didn't have the gun, she could have continued to do the seducing, right?
It was just backup. in case, you know, Bond pulled, he tried to bust a move.
I also don't understand what the, I mean, unless she drugged him and did something like really creative with him, I don't understand what the blackmail material would have been.
Well, exactly. I have a license to kill and, you know, I'm kinky.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I read a piece of trivia, I don't know if it's true or not, that that Pierce Brosnan had to give Halle Berry the Heimlich maneuver because she choked on a fig during their love scene.
Is that code?
Also, she got injured in one of the stunts.
Yeah, apparently she gets injured a lot.
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise injured?
When she, you know, she gets injured when she, you know, hits somebody when she's drunk driving and then drives away.
Was that Halle Berry? Ouch. I have to fact check.
I'm pretty sure.
Fake news. Sad. So, I'm sorry.
Both sides.
You were suggesting that Tom Cruise got hurt lately.
Yes.
You weren't suggesting, you were reporting.
I was referring, yes.
To the latest Mission Impossible movie?
Yeah. Have you not seen the clips?
I have not seen the clips.
Oh, he's doing a stunt where he's leaping from one building top to another, and they've got like the wires on him so he can, you know, leap farther. But he's doing a real leap, and on one attempt, he does not make it. So he slams his midsection into the top of the building like a failed ninja warrior contestant.
Oh.
And then the next time he does it again and also bites it, and the second time he gets up and he's like, he starts like limping away.
Ugh. Xenu will save him.
Yes, he's like no-mossing the whole stunt thing.
Yeah.
May 11, 2000, actress Halle Berry pleaded no contest Wednesday to charges of leaving the scene of a West Hollywood car accident and was sentenced to 3 years probation, fined $13,500 in order to perform 200 hours of community service.
Is that when she made Swordfish? Was that community service?
The other driver had a broken wrist and other injuries and had to be helped from the car by rescuers.
Okay, well, broken wrist isn't the worst, I mean.
She alleged that Berry's rented sports utility vehicle ran a red light and plowed into her car, and then Berry fled the scene. Berry's lawyers say that she lost her recollection of the incident as she had a head injury, as visible by the giant gash in her head. But she pled the fifth. She took the fifth, so.
Yeah, well, as is her right, it's America. Don't drink and drive, people. Bad news.
Well, there's no saying she was drunk.
True. Don't drive poorly, people.
Yeah, don't run red lights.
Yeah, don't leave the scene of an accident.
She would have finished, like 2000, she would have finished Bullworth, so this would have been just after Bullworth.
So we have the fun shenanigans at the hotel, which I thought was fun. That was a fun scene. And the Chinese basically give up the location of Zhao.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly. So Zhao is in Cuba. So we get to fly to Cuba.
We get to experience the DNA washing clinic.
Well, the only part of Cuba that I didn't like was every time he said mojito.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous.
The worst.
And this is a genuine question I have for you. Is Halle Berry a good actress?
I think so. I think it depends on the movie. Bullworth, she was great.
Yeah, she was fine. She was good in Monsters Ball. She won an Academy Award for Monsters Ball. I'm trying to think of anything else she was in that would really, like, show off her chops. She's a better actress than Denise Richards.
So are you.
Oh, so Catwoman.
I didn't see Catwoman.
X-Men.
Didn't see X-Men.
She's terrible in X-Men.
Didn't see Swordfish.
Boomerang.
Didn't see Boomerang.
Jungle Fever.
Did not see Jungle Fever, I don't think. I really like Rosie Perez. Does that count? No, probably not. Although Rosie Perez would probably not make a good Bond girl. Just
Jennifer Lopez.
So we go to Cuba, and did you recognize the little fun they had when he's in the office of that
the sleeper agent.
The sleeper agent. There you go. He picks up the field guide to birds of the West Indies. Do you know why that's there?
No, is that the bird that Sean Connery wore on his head?
No, but a field guide to birds of the West Indies was written by James Bond, who Ian Fleming named the spy James Bond after, the ornithologist, which is a mouthful. If you get my,
he put birds in his mouth.
Double entendre, mojito,
caca, caca.
So we meet Halle Berry, who comes out of the water very much Ursula Andress, and they have the worst patter, like the worst lines to get her into bed ever.
Jacinta Johnson, our friends call me Jinx.
My friends call me James Bond. Jinx, you say?
Born on Friday the 13th.
You believe in bad luck?
Let's just say my relationships don't seem to last.
I know the feeling. The predators usually appear at sunset.
And why is that?
It's when their prey comes out to drink. Too strong for you?
I can learn to like it, if I have the time.
How much time have you got?
Until dawn. What about you?
Oh, I'm just here for the birds. Ornithologist.
Ornithologist, huh? Wow. Now there's a mouthful. So you're going to be busy tonight with the owls, then, huh?
No owls in Los Organos. Nothing to see till the morning. Not out there, anyway.
So what do predators do when the sun goes down?
They feast like there's no tomorrow.
I thought they were actually set up. Like, those were the code words they needed to verify each other's identity. But no, this is actually flirting.
It was pretty awful. Halle Berry is not good in this role.
No. Well, this part of the movie, neither was Pierce Brosnan, I'm going to say.
Would anybody have been good in Halle Berry's role?
Hard to say.
Meryl Streep.
Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher. So pretty much my two go-to actresses is Meryl Streep and Terry Hatcher.
So Terry Hatcher is the pinnacle of Bond women.
Yeah. Let's see.
Charlize Theron.
Sure.
Margaret Cho.
Matthew McConaughey, for that matter.
Yeah, Fairuza Balk. Gabby Hoffman.
Stacey Dash.
Of course. Yes, Stacey Dash. So that's where we meet Jinx, Halle Berry. So she's got her own little mission, we find out. She goes over to this island of the organs or whatever and is going to a secret clinic to get herself her DNA scrubbed or something. DNA replacement. Yeah,
there's some kind of DNA washing, merging thing.
Where they take children's DNA and put them in the body of grown-up horrible people?
Vagrants, homeless people, prostitutes. No, people nobody will miss.
Yes.
But first, they suck out all your marrow and make you an albino.
Yes. Now, is she there? She's not there for Zhao at all. She's just there to kill the doctor, right?
That's what it seemed like.
And Bond kind of gets in the way a little bit because he's there. He is set on revenge. He is off the books. He has gone rogue.
Well, he's pretty single-minded. He just wants to, you know, kill.
Yeah. He's a blunt weapon, a blunt instrument. So I thought Cuba was fun. Nothing wrong with that. Kind of goofy.
It was fun. It was fun-ish.
I mean, the CGI, again, got in the way. There was a problem with all the CGI. They could have done things practically, and they chose not to, and that really irritated me. It looked like a sci-fi movie. S-Y-F-Y.
Oh, see, I didn't pay any attention to that.
Was this the second movie in a row where there was like a gas cylinder explosion?
Oh, maybe. I don't remember. I don't recall. That's how forgettable the last Bond movie was, although I liked the last one.
It's a particular trigger for me since I almost died.
Have we heard that story?
Yeah, when I was cracking one open in the field to get it ready to transport back, and it... No, you haven't heard the story?
No, I haven't heard the story. Do tell the story about gas cylinders. That's important.
For one of my remediation projects, we set up a mobile laboratory so we could test soil for contaminants while we were in the field instead of having to collect samples and ship them back to a laboratory and wait for analysis. So part of this mobile laboratory is we had to have a bunch of different gases to run like the gas chromatogram. So we had probably a half dozen of the like 4 foot, 4 or 5 foot tall gas cylinders. And we brought way more than we needed just to make sure we didn't run out. So when we were getting ready to demobilize the project, we had to empty them out to send them back. And they were, the gases themselves were pretty inert, like nitrogen and oxygen. So to empty them out, we just had to put a regulator on them and open the regulator to just crack it open a little bit so that it would then just emit into the air. So we were doing this outside our building, and I don't know how familiar you are with those tall cylinders, but they come on the top is the regulator that you turn the handle on, and especially for storage and transportation, they have like this sort of metal overcap.
Like a cage sort of thing?
Yeah, to protect the regulator, so it screws on over it, and it's pretty heavy duty, so it can kind of get knocked around without actually touching the regulator knob inside.
Well, plus they're also, I think they usually have thread holes, so you can use a wrench to twist them in case they get caught, right?
Yes, and that's exactly what we had to do, because it did get caught. It was like cross-threaded, so we couldn't get it off, so we couldn't get at the regulator to turn it, to empty out the cylinder, to prepare it for demobilization. So we had probably six of them laid out on the grass outside the building, and I went to go crack open the cap to unscrew the cap. I had to use a screwdriver, and I thought it was just cross-threaded. Turns out something was actually caught on the regulator, so when I torqued on it with the screwdriver in it, I still don't know what it actually happened, but it either was caught on the regulator, and so it cranked it like wide open, or it broke the regulator. But when I finally got it loose, it ejected all of its contents very quickly, and I was like straddling it.
Oh,
So as soon as I heard like the loud hissing, I leapt out of the way and like Spider-Man myself to the side of the building.
You could have been like Slim Pickens.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a very unpleasant experience. I was not happy with what happened.
Did the canister launch itself, or did it just sit there and shake until it was done?
No, luckily it didn't crack open too much, but it did shoot itself back up against the back of the building, not with full force, but then kind of rattled around in the other ones, in between the other cylinders that we had laid out. Yeah, no, it rattled around. It scared the crap out of me, but it was okay.
That is scary.
But I do not like giant gas cylinders.
When I worked at the movie theater, I had to switch out the carbon dioxide tanks when they would get low. And oftentimes, if I wasn't there, one of the lackeys would try and go do it. And I was always be horrified to come into the back room and see one of them with a giant like pipe wrench whacking up against the tank to try and get the thing off. And I'm like, no, let's not do that. No. You just kind of slowly insert it across. There's little thread holes that you put the tool through and you can just twist it. But no, they're just reef on it with a hammer, just like with a wrench, rah, King Kong style. Like, what could possibly go wrong?
You're not going to get your deposit back on that bottle. Have any of you cooked with liquid nitrogen?
Sure.
Nope.
I want to do that sometime, but it seems expensive to get a doer of...
It is.
Yeah.
Also pretty dangerous.
Yeah, fun though. Sounds like fun.
Yeah. It's probably better and safer just to use dry ice.
Also kind of dangerous.
Yeah, but less dangerous.
Have you made fizzy fruit?
I have, well, not fizzy fruit. I've used carbon dioxide to carbonate things.
Yeah, that's what fizzy fruit
is. Use dry ice to carbonate things. Well, no, but I mean, I have a recipe for German brewed root beer, but it's flat and you add dry ice to make it carbonated to drink it. So
do you have to wait till all the dry ice is melted before you can drink it?
No, you drink it with the dry ice in the bottom of your glass or the top of your glass.
That's a scary thing. If you swallow that, you could have some life altering consequences.
Yeah. Well, yes. Touching it is the same effect.
Yeah.
Usually you just put it in a giant punch bowl, with an ice mold, and then I have a ring ice mold, and then you put the dry ice in the center of the ice mold and it just floats on top, and then people can pull their punch out from the sides and it's carbonated. Plus it has the benefit of making the beverage cold. And the side benefit is it scares bugs away. So if you have, like in your backyard in the summertime, it keeps the bugs away and is a punch bowl.
Yeah, apparently if you take a, like just a regular cooler and some dry ice and a bunch of fruit, just like mandarin oranges apparently are really good, and seal it up pretty well. You got to be careful because as it off gasses, as it,
sublimates back,
yeah, you can have a little explosion. But as long as it's sealed up reasonably well, like overnight, you'll end up with a mandarin orange that you can pull out and you peel, and as you eat it, it is carbonated.
Yeah, if you want to flash freeze fruit that you pick, fresh berries especially, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, things like that, normal freezing them, because it's slow, freezing is a slow process, it makes jagged ice crystals through the cell walls, which makes them all goopy and syrupy when you thaw them. But dry ice freezes so fast so that it doesn't have a chance to make the sharp ice crystals. So if you use dry ice to freeze them, like you put them on a cookie sheet, put them in a cooler full of dry ice and freeze them in a couple minutes, and then put them in a Ziploc, they'll last for months and months and months and won't get freezer burned. So that's an Alton Brown thing. However, you have to handle the dry ice, and that's sometimes dangerous.
Just gloves. Glove up, man.
Yeah.
And don't put it inside you. Pretty much anything you cook with, please don't put inside you. Just a general. Yeah. Anyway, so...
turkey baster.
Back to Cuba. So we have Cuba.
Mojito.
And this is where we find out that there's conflict diamonds, and we learn about this billionaire named Gustav.
You skip past the pressure tank through the wall.
That's true, yes. I'm sorry. That's
and the giant helicopter escape.
Yes. Fun.
And that was now an albino.
Yes. An albino kung fu master.
Because Bon interrupted his gene therapy new face procedure. But did they have a plan for getting the diamonds out?
I don't know. It seems like they should have.
It would be hilarious if you had a brand new face, but like the same diamonds.
Also, wouldn't that really dull your razor blades?
That'd be a problem. You wouldn't want to be shaving around all that scar tissue anyway. You wouldn't really grow hair right there, right?
I would think not, but nah, that would really destroy your razor.
You'd have to electric use like razor, one especially. Of those epilady things that just rip the hair out.
Just wax. Just yeah, wax you your face.
That's what was really bugging me about this movie. It made no sense that Zhao didn't have a scraggly beard where he couldn't shave anymore. Just took me right out of it.
Now we're fencing with Madonna. Quite Baccarat.
Yeah, well, hold on. We meet Gustav Graves, well, at the fencing club, but Gustav Graves is a British billionaire who discovered a diamond mine in Iceland. And Gustav Graves is played by actor Toby Stevens, who is the son of royalty, acting royalty, and also the star of Black Sails, Severance, and the upcoming, Lost in Space series. But I think his mother is Dame Maggie Smith.
Oh, really?
His father is Sir somebody or other Stevens.
Oh, Sir Stevens.
Yeah.
Way to be informative there.
Oh, Sir Ray Stevens, Guitar Zan.
See, that's where I was going to go with it. The squirrel went berserk.
So Bond flies to London and locates Graves at a fencing club. And the two engage in a duel of swords, the fury of which is escalated when the two men raise the stakes and injure each other, damaging part of the club in the process. Now, this is where they increased the film speed to make it look like the actors were moving faster than they really were. They were actually going at like half speed, which didn't work very well. And also, these guys were angry from the word from jump. I mean, Bond was going to cleave this guy in two with the broadsword, having met him for the first time.
Yeah, but he parachuted in like a real dick.
True.
Douche.
So this is where we meet the fencing partner, Miranda Frost, played by Rosamund Pike from Gone Girl, The World's End, Jack Reacher, and Johnny English Reborn. And her fencing instructor, Verity, played by the one and only Madonna, who I'm going to credit Madonna for here. She got on and got off the screen fast enough that it was fine.
She Terry Hatchered it.
She was in, she was out. She brought her lesbian overtones.
And her gap.
And her gap and her like leather bustier. Got in, got out. So then we go down to a disused London underground station. And M meets up with Bond, restores his 00 status, and offers assistance into his investigation. Because Bond...
Which is where we get virtual reality training with the smarmy Q.
Yeah, I like the Q better this one than the last time.
And we get the Vanish Vanquish.
Yes. Now, this again, because of the CGI, this was ridiculous.
This is fine.
Wait, I had a question about the fencing. Sorry to take a step back. Does being good at fencing mean you're actually like good at sword fighting?
I think so. They train with all the different kinds of swords.
You have to ask Inigo Montoya.
Yeah, because they have like foil and saber and epi. So you'd think you'd have technique. I mean, I don't think you'd be taking the double-handed Renaissance fair Scottish Highland blade. You know, if it's laying around the club, why not?
All right.
Yeah, so we have the Vanquish, the Vanish, whatever. I put in my comments that I thought John Cleese was much better as the bitter Q than as the inept R. We also meet Michael Madsen, who's the ugly American CIA guy, who is, in a nutshell, Michael Madsen. He's everything you want in a Michael Madsen type.
Yeah, he's pretty much just Mr. Blonde in every role, right?
Yeah, he's half of a Tom Sizemore as far as acting chops.
Why was this subplot necessary?
To spin off the Jinx movies.
But no other purpose?
Nope.
Because I could have left it out and it would have had no impact on the movie.
You're absolutely right. Well, Jinx was shoved in there, so...
And yeah, and his character Falco was such an asshole that when he called M's second in command, when he called him Robinson later on, I had to look up to make sure the character's name was Robinson and that Falco wasn't just racist.
Well, one does not preclude the other.
True. I was like, that's really going too far.
Yeah, so... Bond goes to Iceland at the invitation of soon-to-be Sir Graves, and we meet Jinx again. We have an ice hotel, whatever, and we learn about this orbiting mirror satellite called Icarus.
The giant Jiffy Pop satellite, Icarus.
Yes. Now, why was it called Icarus? I'll tell you. The original name was Solaris, but because there was a movie called Solaris that was produced in the very same year, they had to change it.
Oh, and before we get there, we learn that Frost is actually an MI6 agent.
Yes, we do.
Well, Icarus was, you know, flying too close to the sun.
Well, that's the problem. I wouldn't name anything, any satellite, Icarus. Just like you wouldn't name any boat the Titanic. Just seems like a bad idea.
And I know he really tried to sell it, but I still can't wrap my head around why this is a good thing.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, because it can burn through the clouds and put sunshine in your crops. I don't know. Yeah, it did seem...
Screw up the circadian rhythms of animals and bugs and humans everywhere.
Yeah, it seems like it would cause problems, but... I think one of my favorite characters in this movie is Vlad, played by Michael Gore from one of your mom's favorite shows lately, Ekaterina, and also Bridge of Spies and The Hitman's Bodyguard. He's the, as I put in my notes, he's the sexually ambiguous or European, take your pick, answer to Ricky Jay.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, was this is who should have been the Ricky Jay character.
Yeah.
Because he was perfect. He looked weird, and that made him interesting, and then he didn't actually have to do anything.
Exactly. And yet wasn't like stinking up the place by not doing anything.
Right.
Excuse me, you get that good quote where she says, sex for dinner and death for breakfast.
Yes.
It was like shoehorned in.
Yeah, it's, you know, the dialogue in this movie is, eh.
But Jesse's quote for this movie is that the corny laser show was worth it just for the laser shot through the back of his throat.
Yeah. That was the only part of it that was the least bit interesting, and everything else was just wacky for the sake of wacky.
Well, the laser hand removal was kind of a nice touch.
Yeah, I suppose, but I think it was just, over the top on purpose, and I think that was a bad decision.
Well, also because Jinx is basically Catwoman rappelling into the facility.
But Drew is right that she, so on one hand, she's Catwoman, she's a superhero that's doing all this crazy super stuff like Michelle Yeoh, but she's also like totally damseled into being like Batman bondage victim from the pre comics code comics.
Yeah, Jinx is not good at her job.
No,
she's just not.
Although she tells you, she's some of a Jinx.
You think some of that was the. Look at the klutzy Americans and look at the classy British agents.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, but if they wanted to spin her off into her own series, she had to get out of the predicaments herself.
Exactly.
She's trapped in a room and she can't get out before it melts. That's not really a charismatic leading lady you want to watch in a movie.
Well, each individual movie in the series, you can watch her male co-stars rescue her all the time. That's a charming throwback.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Brenda Starr, Girl Reporter. Although, actually, Brenda Starr, Girl Reporter would have gotten herself out of the things.
That's right.
Even Nancy Drew would have gotten herself out of things. So Jinx is captured by Zhao, and Bond's figured out that Graves is really Colonel Moon, and then Moon reveals that Frost is a double agent.
Dun, dun, yeah, they really gave Moon the Kubo treatment, huh, Jason?
Then we have the race car.
Yeah, you have a point, though, where seemingly Bond can outrun bullets.
Oh, yeah. Bond has a long history of outrunning the Stormtrooper bad shot. bad guys.
He improvises a parachute, showing British ingenuity. Then he wakeboards. Then they have an icy car chase where Bond inexplicably is driving around with his windows down.
At least he has windows.
Yeah, the fact that he used his watch to laser cut a hole in the ice and break into the ice palace that way or whatever. Did you instantly think, okay, he's just dead? He doesn't have anything covering his face. He would never get to that second hole.
Well, I told Jesse he'd never be able to keep his eyes open.
No, his heart would probably stop just jumping into the water like that.
He had one of those crazy dry suits that were black. Maybe they're heated.
Okay, but his face was completely bare.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, his eyes would be a problem.
Yeah.
Look, he can stop his heart. That's just true. By you're thinking right. about it. Yeah. Like, I think he's going to be fine in the chilly water.
So I really like Zhao's Jaguar XKR. Never went into production, by the way.
It was really a top-of-the-line Jag. It was totally tricked out with all the spy toys.
Oh, it was beautiful. And it had way more spy toys than Bond's vehicle. And it was like a particular part of the chase is where Bond ends up going in reverse. And Bond's missiles in front counter, or Bond's machine guns in front counter Zhao's missiles in the front of his car. But as soon as Bond turns around again, Zhao doesn't use those missiles anymore. Seemed like that would be the perfect time to shoot the missiles.
Yeah, I like that this is a car chase where the other guy had gadgets too.
Yeah. And it was ridiculous, but it was fine. I mean, again, I think it's sort of less than noble ending of being crushed by a chandelier. Although I guess maybe that's because of the diamond.
With the giant fruit punch Kool-Aid red stains in the water.
Yes. The blood geyser.
Mm-hmm. Blood geyser! Yeah!
Follow them on tour.
That's going to be my rock band name right there, man. Blood Geyser. And the vegan indie band, Feminine Margarine.
That's weird. My rock band name is Moose Knuckle.
Oh, God.
Very nice.
It's Alaskan.
Yeah. So basically, Zhao dies in the chandelier.
Miranda's a traitor.
Yes.
She's the one that betrayed Bond in Korea.
Sun Moon has fled the scene. But Bond and Jinx are now teamed up officially, and they're going to go to South Korea and basically just sniper kill Colonel Moon.
Well, they fly in on a Skyluge, right?
Oh, that's true, yes. The Switchblade, which also horrible effects. Horrible, horrible, horrible effects. The worst. But yeah, actually, you know what? You're right. The parasailing thing was even worse than that. But then we get luckily the sniper thing doesn't work out so well, because otherwise it would have been a pretty dull ending. So instead they have to steal away on this gigantic
merciful for the audience.
Yes. I don't know. I kind of like the airplane scene at the end.
I did not like the the Superman versus Batman suit.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Also, the reason Miranda Frost was like dressed up in weird costume on the board of a plane, like superhero costume, but like in not a feminine superhero.
No,
makes no sense. There was Father Moon was tried to save the world from Sun Moon, but it didn't work out so well. We have the Americans sitting down on the ground being like, well, if we let them like destroy the entire DMZ, but the minute it goes across the other line, then we're going to nuke the crap out of them. Which, by the way, I realize this is going to date the podcast, but in world news, North Korea has decided it's not going to nuke Guam because America's going to set itself on fire. We don't need anybody's help.
That was the plan all along.
Yeah. I'm telling you, if they just change their if they, instead of trying to miniaturize nuclear weapons, if they just like devoted their industrial forces into making cheap tiki torches, they could just win economically.
I know. I'm going to have to hide my tiki torches. I don't want the neighbors to think something's up.
Yeah, your beard and the tiki torches do not... yeah. Just don't wear any, like, flat black, Air Force bomber jacket things. Send the wrong message.
Damn it.
No red shoelaces.
I won't tie them either, because that way there's no little Nazis.
Aw. So cute.
I had a guy today, as I was leaving the office, walk up to me and say, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned."
Well, did you forgive him?
Yeah. Did you provide absolution?
I told him to go do 20 Hail Marys and be gone.
And 15 push-ups.
10% of his earnings for the next year.
Yeah, something like that.
So the final fight between Jinx and Miranda, she gets that nice, where Jinx gets the nice Kirk-like Amok Time stomach cut from the blade.
Yes.
Where she's like, "Mother trick."
Yeah, I was waiting for her entire outfit to get cut up like Amidala in Attack of the Clones.
It would have actually fit the rest of that particular scene. I was embarrassed for Rosamund Pike.
Yes, that was... I was, even though I'm not much of a fan of her in this movie, I was embarrassed for Jinx's Gina Davis final line. "Read this, bitch."
Yeah.
That's how she ended the fight.
Yeah, it does seem kind of cheap, doesn't it?
Yes.
The CGI in the plane scene was goofy, but again, I kind of enjoyed it.
Also, if the plane was disintegrating and that much on fire, it would not be airworthy.
Well, it was going down.
There's no way it wouldn't have gone down before that point. There's no way. Not with that much fire.
I'm not an aeronautical engineer. I have no idea. But yeah, it seems like it would be difficult also to start your helicopter as it's plummeting from the sky, but they seem to do a good job with it. I felt bad for the rice farmers below that had to deal with all the expensive sport cars in the Stonehenge formation below. Mm-hmm. Although it's kind of hard to do Stonehenge with only two cars, but still. Also, the cheesy ending. Okay, actually, here, sorry. I'm asking you guys, what do you think of that ending?
It's pretty cheesy.
Wouldn't naked diamond sex really hurt?
I mean, I can sort of understand the playful afterglow of diamond sex, but how the double entendre to get there was just killing me. I mean, I like wordplay. Don't get me wrong. And the cheaper, the better.
I'm sorry. You like what play?
Wordplay.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Just
not. Cunning linguist. Master debater.
Come on. It's, yeah. It's
yeah, just... there's nothing clever about this.
Exactly. Yeah, give me some clever.
It was just cheap.
Yep.
Just like, it's like they decided they couldn't give any scene that had Halle Berry in it any sort of clever dialogue.
Yeah. I don't know. So all in all, any other trivia or any other comments before we deliver our verdict?
Nah.
Brother Jay?
I'll give it a B minus.
Charitable.
Well, I mean, it had some good points. It had some good action. The plot was weak in a lot of parts, obviously. But it moved. It was entertaining. I didn't get bored, although it was awful in a couple places, but awful in the way that Bond movies have grown to be awful. So... I think also lowering expectations last week probably helped somewhat. So, you know, not the greatest Bond film, not the worst Bond film, but, you know, it was okay.
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
I can't say it was worth it, although I will admit it was better than I remembered it being. I remembered it being really horrible. Yeah, it's hard to tell if this one was better than the last one. I guess it probably was a little bit. But again, I really like the beginning. The first part of this movie, probably all the way up through Cuba, was actually shaping up to be pretty good. But then Halle Berry showed up, and I don't think it's her fault as much as it was Denise Richards' fault in the last movie. But it just, after that point in the movie, it just really goes off the rails. Toby Stevens is wasted. I mean, he could be a really good scenery chewing villain, I think. But his scheme just made no sense, and his super weapon was ridiculous.
And pay off the scorpions,
right? Yeah,
don't have an entire open with lots of scorpions and not pay it off at all. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But you know what? I mean, all in all, I think. I think there are good things to say about every Bond except for maybe Timothy Dalton. And but I think when I think of James Bond, I think of Pierce Brosnan.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's the worst thing that ever happened to Timothy Dalton, is he was right before Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
He got Brosnaned.
Yeah, he was no Roger Moore. And he was no Pierce Brosnan, yeah. Yeah, and I don't mind Timothy Dalton in other things. Don't get me wrong.
No, he's really good in other things.
Yeah, I thought Pierce Brosnan was great. And I mean, you know, a lot of the dialogue, I'm going to blame on the writers. And, you know, the direction could have been better. I mean, it wasn't the greatest director. But, you know, I was fine. This is a nice little installment in the Bond universe, and it will be interesting to, in the next couple of weeks, watch the Daniel Craig Bond movies again.
Yeah, the director in this movie, he made some really bad choices. Like the weird camera stuff he did during the action scenes made it feel like a Fast and Furious movie, but not like in a fun way.
Yeah, it just didn't. And this was not a summer blockbuster. They'd already learned their lesson there.
Yeah, it was just distracting. It was just like, this is what we're doing now? It's weird. All right. In fact, Jason even texted us to make sure that his copy of the movie was okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, is my DVD player acting up?
But no, I think this is we have one more Bond left, and that's Spectre. And we'll do, as we discussed before, we'll do a Daniel Craig sort of recap, followed by our discussion of the Spectre movie in about a month, I think. And then we're done with Bond until the next movie, till Bond 25. So, housekeeping, Brother Jay.
I don't know that I have anything particular this week.
Brother Drew?
I watched a movie just for fun. My wife and I did. We watched The Arrival. Have either of you seen it?
No, but I was interested.
With Amy Adams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did. I actually liked it quite a bit. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
No, it was not.
You did not like it.
No, I think I did.
I think I did. That's not exactly a ringing endorsement of a movie.
Well, and I don't want to give anything away, but it got me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jason, if you haven't seen it and you want to, I'm not going to say much about it, but there's a lot of good...
You're going to like the science in it. It's a Contact kind of movie.
It's made by people who are good at their craft.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It is excellent. It is stunningly beautiful.
It reminds me a lot of Contact without having any of the same plot elements.
Is it less preachy than Contact?
It's got a fair amount of preach, but not. I mean, just like all science, all non shoot 'em up action science fiction, usually has some sort of social message.
Yeah, it's definitely a thinker. But yeah, directed by the same dude that directed Sicario, who's really good at taking like low light scenes and making them look really good.
Yeah, we should put that on a list because it's worth talking about.
Yeah, I don't know what I would. It's so hard to describe.
But, yeah, can't describe without giving it away. That's for sure.
But I enjoyed it. Didn't particularly like the opening part, but enjoyed it.
Yeah, it had places to go. I watched two movies. One was actually on the Facebook. Listener Becky from England watched a movie with her nan. It's a Mario Bava movie called The Girl Who Knew Too Much. It's kind of the Mario Bava's an Italian director, and it's kind of his nod to Alfred Hitchcock, starring John Saxon, who you'll recognize from all sorts of stuff. But it was really good. It was interesting. It had that, you know, that had that Italian flavor to it, but it was pretty fun. And she sent a message saying that, you know, that she was she would pass on to her nan that I watched it because of her recommendation. And she asked me if I had seen any other Bava movies. And I was trying to think off the top of my head. I thought, okay, I think there's a movie called Black Sabbath, which is very stylish, but it's just not my kind of thing. But it's well respected, and so I mean I like it. I like that movie. Like I kind of like the Universal monsters of the 30s. Like they're great for what they are, but they're not like I don't have any passion for it. But it turns out the other movie that I really got into the last like 6 months or so, so much so that I put it on the calendar, was Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Bomb. He directed that. It's the Vincent Price, what's the guy's name? Not Annette Funicello, but who's the other guy in those
Frankie
movies?
Frankie Avalon.
Frankie Avalon. Yeah. And it was great. So, anyway, shout out there. It also made me watch, it also inspired me to watch Dario Argento's movie, The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, which I think is characterized as a giallo, sort of a Italian mystery. And I like that quite a bit too. Knowing what you're getting into, realizing that it's kind of got, it's, you know, it's sort of a suspense thing. It's kind of a thriller. But it's also very Italian. Argento for me, Dario Argento, if you've watched Suspiria, that's a good example of, it's kind of a Kubrickian sort of thing where he's doing a lot of auteur director crap.
So there's only three piano notes through the whole soundtrack.
Well, it's like playing with the color palettes in a really heavy-handed way, and you know, again, it was probably very spectacular and cutting edge at the time. And it was fine, but it's not, I mean, does it hold up as anything but an exercise in style? I don't know. I don't think it's particularly scary.
So we get through the Swedish version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
All three movies?
Well, it's on Netflix, it's in six parts.
Oh, really? So it's
the Millennium series.
Okay, because it's broken up into three movies.
Yeah, so they broke those movies each into two parts.
Okay, so do you watch all six then?
No, I've watched the first movie, which is the first two parts.
Okay. So it's basically the same as the David Fincher film?
Yes, which is startling for some reasons because a lot of it is just word for word the same thing.
Oh, it's just like a scene for scene remake, right?
In some cases, it's very much scene for scene. Although some of the story was obviously different. It was clearly Americanized and kind of sanitized for American audiences a little bit in some spots. There's some definite culture changes, but I kind of rather like the Swedish version better. So,
I really like Naomi Rapace. I think is her how she
Rapace. I agree. I'm interested to watch the next. I mean, Jesse really wants to see the other two, but I'm interested to see the other ones as well. But so far, I mean, it's it's shot very, I mean, it's beautifully shot, and I'm not distracted by the subtitles. I think I'm actually more engaged with the movie since I have to pay attention to the subtitles. So I'm not as distracted with the cinematography because sometimes I'm focused on the text, which is probably a mixed bag because some of it's shot just amazingly well.
Yeah, but even having... The dude that plays Michael Nyquist is, or Michael Nyquist, the dude who plays Bloomquist, yeah.
Yeah.
He's really good.
He is really good. He's really compelling.
And just died.
Oh. Wow.
It's a bummer. But yeah, he was good.
Oh. Well, that's a bummer.
Have you read the books?
No. I hear the books are terrible.
They were a hit for one summer, that's for sure. Or but probably three summers, right?
I think the story goes downhill.
Well, the last one was produced after the author died.
That's the fourth one, right?
I thought it was the third one. That could be.
I think it's the third one, yeah.
And now there's a fourth one that's just completely written.
Oh, yeah. But I think by the estate, because I think he had stuff in the hopper, and the wife, she wasn't, I don't think she was really the wife. I don't think they were married, but
that is a dark, dark hopper.
I think there is some dispute over the estate because they weren't married, and she had some materials that were the fourth book, and they're going to hire a writer to line out the rest of it. And
I've read the three books and I've seen all three movies. So I'm interested to hear what you think about them once you're through them.
Yeah. Since I upgraded my Apple TV and now everything's in super high def, on my TV, and it's very smooth and seamless. We seem there's more stuff on there now, so yeah. But and then in other news, Amazon they're creating the Jack Ryan series.
Oh, who's playing Jack Ryan? wait, hold on. Let me guess.
You won't guess.
Nope, Mario Lopez. Ryan Seacrest, Chris Hardwick.
Hugh Dancy.
No.
Hugh Grant.
No.
Hugh Laurie.
No.
Patrick Fugit.
D.L. Hughley. Oh, no, hold on. Who was the guy in... the guy from There Will Be Blood? The kid.
Wait,
Paul Dano?
Yes. William H. Macy.
Ron Perlman.
Did you ever watch The Office?
The English Office or The American Office?
The American.
Oh, no.
Dwight?
No.
Oh, okay. John Krasinski or whatever his name is?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, that might be all right.
Yeah, he could be fine. He seems to be vanilla. Oh.
Yeah.
It's what I want from a Jack Ryan. I want somebody who blends into the scene.
So milk toast and bland. I feel like eating a bowl of wallpaper paste.
No, he was all right in that Benghazi movie as like a military dude. It was pretty good.
So to get back to the movie I was talking about, the Mario Bava movie,
mm-hmm.
In America, it was known as Evil Eye. In the UK, it was called The Girl Who Knew Too Much. In Italy, it was La Ragazza Che Sapeva Troppo. In Belgium, the French title was Obsession Diabolique. Mexico was Noche del Demonio.
That one sounds pretty good.
Yes. So, yeah. Anyway, it was interesting. I would recommend it. I think it's on, maybe on Netflix streaming. But John Saxon is one of those. And I couldn't tell whether it was poorly dubbed or... because it was a 1962 movie and it was in an Italian movie, whether or not it was one of those things where everybody was dubbed on purpose because every actor spoke a different language. Like I think the Vincent Price movie, The Last Man on Earth was a little bit like that. Like, he spoke English, but nobody else did. And so they ended up, like, basically dubbing everybody but him.
So John Saxon from Enter the Dragon and Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors.
Actually, I think he was Heather's dad in the entire series.
Oh, he was in all of the Nightmare on Elm Streets?
Oh, I'm sorry. He was Heather Langenkamp was the girl. Her name was Nancy Thompson. He was Nancy's dad, the police officer.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
So, Stieg Larsson, after his death, the 3 completed manuscripts, unpublished, were found. Then, he had apparently left 3/4 of a 4th novel on his notebook computer.
Ah.
And then synopses or manuscripts of the 5th and 6th, which he intended to comprise an eventual book of a total of 10 books.
Oh, God.
Yeah, now, okay, here's one thing that, well, yeah, you know, I'll wait till you get done with all the movies. Because actually, I have them on my rotation now, too. So I'll maybe, by the time you get done with them, I'll have seen them all again. But I have definite opinions about the story. Although, Elizabeth Salinger, or whatever her name is great. I mean, it's just a great character. So dark. The darkest character ever. And Rooney Mara does fine, but I think Rooney Mara was a little bit too made up. Like, she had, like, a little, like, she was about 3 piercings too much.
Nah, I think she was fine. I mean, it really got her lost in the role and made her, I mean, I totally see her in that role. I mean, I don't see her from any other performance. I really just see her as this character. So it did a good job of making her out to be truly this character. And so I didn't get distracted at all by, you know, The Social Network or the other things that I've seen her in. So I appreciated that. I thought Daniel Craig was fine, but I don't think he was, again, the best choice. They're both
really good movies.
Both of them have good points and bad points, but I'm leaning towards the original version being the better version and the American version being, you know, unfortunate. It's nice, but it's unfortunate because.
Well, it's very pretty. I mean, David Fincher did a great job.
Oh, it is. But also, you know, it's probably not going to get. I think that was it.
Yeah, well, that might be okay.
Yeah. But
you'll let us know.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.